And on behalf of the other members of the South Australian Press Club, welcome here today. Just the moment in our proceedings where we take time to thank our sponsors, being Optus Communications, who provide us with the necessary funds to keep us in the black, and also to Qantas, who fly in our guest speakers from time to time. So would you please thank Optus Communications and Qantas? We'd also like to thank South Australian Brewing Company and South Corp Wines, who are both who assist us at every lunch, and Bob Bailey, Managing Director of SA Brewing. Nice to see you here.
Thank you, Ben.
Welcome, Bob. Bob's probably thinking, this bird bobs up everywhere. Aren't you? Also, you've got a great chance in the raffle today, let me tell you. And we have some nice prizes, as we always do. We have from Bob and from Robbie Cooter a carton of Hahn Premium. And of course, you all know that Hahn Premium is a true premium class beer. And Robbie said to me, now make sure you give it a little plug, so I'm going to do that. The notes that I have here says that at 5% alcohol by volume, that this beer, Hahn Premium, goes down well with richly flavoured dishes, spaghetti marinara or even German sausages with spicy mustards. So just remember that one, Hahn Premium. You could win a carton of that. We've got a voucher for Ragone's. You can have lunch at Ragone's thanks to Alan Rogers. And we have a voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe in Gooja Street, also from Alan Rogers. And Francine Connor walked in with a lovely bottle of Eileen Hardy Chardonnay, the 1996 Hardy's Chardonnay, that won the Max Schubert Trophy at this year's Royal Adelaide Show. So that's a special bottle of wine. Somebody will win that too. So you've got a good chance today. And thank you all for coming today. And would you please welcome the President of the South Australian Press Club, Don Riddell.
Thank you, Sue Fraser. And the Brewing Company thanks you too. I used to love those old movies when a star was launched. There was a montage of clapping hands and a roaring train and more clapping hands, Rome, Paris, Madrid. Well, our guest's a bit like that. Today's Thursday, it must be Adelaide. But it seems that, oh, when we were children, many years ago, I presented her with the Advertiser Star of the Fringe Award, this shy little girl who, I think, sang some rather nasty Brechtian Kurt Bailey sort of songs with a lovely growl in the voice. And she was on her way. Within weeks of that award, she was in London doing the same thing there and became an international star. Since then, she's gone beyond being a performer. She writes and directs. And no one directs anything bigger here than the Adelaide Festival of Arts, and she's got two of them. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Robin Archer, who is about to give Adelaide a big cultural squeeze.
Thank you very much. I'll say at the outset that in case any of you start immediately speculating about my private sexual life when you see the bruises all over my arms, I've just returned a day ago from 10 days in China and 10 days in Japan, and landing in Namba Station in Osaka for the first time in your life, having taken the Shinkansen from Tokyo to Osaka, which took 3 hours. It then took 2 hours to get from the Shin Osaka Station to the hotel where I had to see a show that night. That was 3 subways, many, many hundreds of thousands of Japanese commuters, and 1 bus. And, you know, when they said to me, when I took on this job, a couple of knowing, good, wise friends said, gee, you're going to need broad shoulders for this job. I hadn't actually realised that they literally meant, you know, the shoulder has got to have room for the briefcase, the computer, 6 other bags, a couple of cases containing all the videos that the Chinese artists have just given you in China. And when you go to the Australian Embassy in Beijing, they say, no, we can't send anything home for you, even though there's no postal service, so you can do it yourself. We don't even do it for ministers, they said. And I said, yes, but ministers have usually got lackeys to carry them. I'm doing this by myself. No go, they said. So I arrived in the Tokyo station overladen, and I bruise easily. And so after kind of 2 hours in the subways, I return with the bruises of my profession. It's simply travelling, and you're going so fast you don't know what's happening. So that scotched that rumour right from the start. You won't get any mileage out of that whatsoever. I've just come now from my old alma mater, Enfield High School, where I was invited to do the speech at the what they call Celebrating Success Assembly. Kind of appropriate to come immediately from there, which was fantastic to hear. I started at Enfield High School in 1961. The school had just been built, and I think it should actually have an order on it as perfect 60s architecture. It's an unbelievable structure. It was 1 year after the Adelaide Festival had started. I would have been very blissfully unaware, I think, of anything like an Adelaide Festival at the time. It had started, the festival, in my last year at Enfield Primary School, when Professor John Bishop and other arts lovers in the community took one look at Edinburgh and basically said, "We believe, old boy, that we ought to have one of those out here." They cloned the Edinburgh Festival. It was cloned slightly earlier to Perth, then came to Adelaide. Little did those founding fathers, as indeed they were, know that when they cloned the Edinburgh Festival to Adelaide, they cloned it to the best possible place they could have in the world. There are immense geographical similarities. Small, centralised place, lots of green areas, you can get a hotel in the city, you can walk to everything, you bang into people going from one event to another. This basically has worked best in Adelaide and continues to work better here than certainly anywhere else in Australia and perhaps anywhere else in the world, except on a par, Edinburgh and Avignon in France. And these three, as if we haven't told you enough already, these three festivals are rated as the best three of their kind in the world. So the founding fathers, while I was completing my last year at primary school, did very well to decide to have this event. Only 10 years after it, I was part of the Adelaide Festival, having graduated from the Adelaide University in 1969 with an honours degree in English language and literature. I went straight into a show called On the Fringe at the YWCA Hall in Pennington Terrace. For your ears, for your record and for your great good knowledge, I'll tell you now that it is the once and only time I have ever performed in any fringe event anywhere in any world at any time. It does seem to be this peculiar idea that because your work may be political, may be radical in nature, may be breaking forms, that somehow it is automatically part of the fringe. No, folks, it's been mainstream all the way, straight from Adelaide, straight onto the stage of the Royal National Theatre in Britain, where I had great success and my first international success at that place, and have never been in a fringe since. Not that I wouldn't mind, it just hasn't been my career. I was spotted in that festival show, and there's a bit of a lesson about what festivals can do for young Adelaide artists. I was spotted in that show by one Bill Boyley, who was at that time running the Trocadero nightclub in Hindley Street. Now, the Trocadero was the Trocadero for quite a while, then it became Les Girls, then it burnt down. It's the fate of most excellent nightclubs in Australia, particularly in Hindley Street. The end result of 16 years of absolutely first-class Adelaide education at Enfield Primary School, Enfield High School and Adelaide University resulted in two shows a night, six nights a week in Hindley Street, wearing a long sparkly dress which my mum made for me out of orange sequins with a very big hole right there, and teaming up with such veterans as Big Pretzel and comics Keith Peterson and Mick Lane. And boy, my education hadn't even started when I did that show. It also included pigs, dwarves, you name it. We had it at the Trocadero. Since that time, that first Adelaide fringe event that I was in, I have vivid memories of being in festival audiences. The London Symphony Orchestra in Centennial Hall. My boyfriend and I had done our exams there and seen the Beatles in the same place. Marlene Dietrich in the Scott Theatre. Anthony Steele's remarkable explosion in the festival into grand pianos descending from cranes at night in spotlights, a naked cellist playing ice, and of course Cleo Lane as Pierrot Lunaire. And then naturally as a performer in many festivals, with New Opera South Australia in 1976 in George Dreyfus's The Lamentable Reign of George IV, at the Club in Light Square, the commission from Christopher Hunt, which was Songs from Sideshow Alley, that was his first festival, which I wrote and starred in with Robin Nevin, and which incidentally is having another season to start the Riverina Theatre Company's season next year. Anomar, the show that I wrote and directed for four women of colour in Australia, including Dorinda Hafner and Rhoda Roberts, who's just directed the Festival of the Dreaming for the Olympic Arts Festivals, and many, many others, including last year with Kathy Travers in the Town Hall to a terrific audience. So I guess with that history, you can try to imagine the excitement that came when Frank Ford from the board of the Adelaide Festival rang me and said, "Do you want to come and have a chat?" To which I said yes. The peculiar thing was that at that time, having never had a job in my life apart from 1.5 years at Presbyterian Girls, 1.5 years at Elizabeth High School teaching, and 1 year at 1.5 years at Presbyterian Girls College, after being a nightclub singer, I haven't really had a job ever in my life. No nights off, no security, no superannuation, no holidays, no nothing, no working all the time, but no salary, no nothing, no mattress, no nothing, nothing to fall down on. Such is the fate of those who choose the arts. At that time, when the Adelaide Festival Board approached me, I was being approached by the New Museum of Victoria, destined to go up in late 2000, about a job for 5 years. I had to think very carefully, because this was very exciting. The director, Graham Morris, of the Museum of Victoria, wanted to invite people from other creative avenues into the museum so that their new museum was a great one, that it was interesting, that it was creatively presented. I was very tempted. And when I was suddenly offered another 5-year job, well, I nearly fell over first. And then I had to make some really hard and fast decisions about what I thought would benefit me and everyone else the best. In the end, I had to come down on the side of the Adelaide Festival. It was the perfect invitation for the hometown girl to be able to return to her hometown with the best job in the city. And subsequently, the Museum of Victoria asked if in my spare time I would like to take up a consultancy with the Museum of Victoria, which I did. So any moment of spare breath that I have, I tend to go over to Melbourne, and it was one of those great moments where I said to them, "I'd love to do something for the museum, it's very exciting, but get one thing straight, I never take a piece of paper away and I never bring a piece of paper here with me. You can have my brain for a week or 4 days or a day, whatever you like." And they said yes, so my brain has been hired and I never have to write anything or read anything. So that's a wonderful relationship. Very, very good indeed. From the outside, you never actually know how the system works in the Adelaide Festival. I guess I had some clues because prior to that I'd directed three successful festivals in Canberra, the National Festival of Australian Theatre. These were very enjoyable festivals. They were minuscule by comparison to the Adelaide Festival. In our imaginations and the imaginations of everyone in the country and overseas, Adelaide's the one. But nevertheless, I had certain experience about how a festival is not so different from putting a show together, or a song for that matter, that you have a whole lot of elements, you've got to put them together properly. There are certain things about budgets, there are certain things about timing, staff, balance, all those things. So some experience, but indeed you still never quite know until you're in the middle of it. As an artist, a festival is something of a mystery. It's a process of obscure decision-making. Why isn't my show good enough? Why didn't you have mine instead of theirs? What's the reason behind that? It's only really when you get in there that you can really appreciate the complex balance that needs to be achieved, the tricky jigsaw puzzle that you have to solve in order to deliver a real Adelaide Festival. There are, for a start, a few givens. Contractually, I am obliged to deliver a festival that covers all genres, that is, all genres of the performing arts and also visual arts and literature via Writers' Week. I am obliged to include the best of local, national and international work in order to do that festival. And I'm also obliged to have a dialogue with a lot of Adelaide companies, very specifically. There are also a few givens in terms of precedent. This is something that I think one works out for oneself. And it seemed clear to me from my vast experience of the growth of this festival, its perceived successes and failures, that the two greatest precedents were that a successful Adelaide festival had to be both delivering great art, and in Adelaide's case it's not just great in terms of skill levels, people at the top of their profession in whatever, whether that be dance, classical music, whatever. Not only great art, but in Adelaide's case, art that pushes the boundaries of the arts. This is the reputation that this festival has had. So one had to do that successfully, and you had to bring that from all over the world. You had to look for the best in Australia and Adelaide and the world to do that. But also, the festivals that worked always created a great sense of celebration for the citizens. That is, there was a real sense of festivity in this festival. And I, from the outset, knew that I would have to be at pains to provide both those things. I think one had recent examples of festivals that had great art but had no great party, and they were deemed failures even though they had some of the finest performances in the world. Some festivals that seemed like a great party but didn't have the depth in the arts that people wanted. To get both those things working is the great trick, or that's what I perceived was the precedent before me. And somewhere in amongst all those givens, which are a lot on a great budget, but in the end it will only stretch so far. Once you've satisfied all those things and you've put a tick against all that, it's not that rigid, but you try to do that. Somewhere in all that, you need to plant your own vision so the thing really works. My vision about the festival was clear from the very start, from the very first interview that I had with the board of the festival. It seemed to me that one of the enduring strengths of the Adelaide Festival is that there's been a different director for every festival. This means that unlike other festivals which have had a chance to wear into a sameness, a similar taste, a similar direction, Adelaide always comes up with a fresh idea for every festival. You have a different personality to contend with, different aesthetic principles, different decisions, different valuing of certain arts. This seems to me to be one of the great strengths of the festival. On the other hand, I could see the sense, given the hoo-ha that's going to be happening in 2000, the eminent sense in getting somebody to direct too. Therefore, from the very beginning, I planned these festivals as a contrasting pair. Secondly, I wanted to underscore the millennial and centurial habit of evaluating. I think this is something that what always seems to have happened at the end of a century, and even if we go back to the last millennium and see what was going on, what was in the wind at that time, I think you find that there's a general sense of people saying, using it as a marker, like a birthday, like an anniversary. What have we done since this last big marker came up? What's been happening? Where do we stand in all that? So it seemed to me that what would be appropriate for these two festivals, to make them different and appropriate, would be to make 98 a great festival in the classic mould. What would I mean by a great festival in the classic mould? I would mean that all genres of the performing arts were clearly and well served. That you might open with an opera, which was one of the great traditions of this festival. You might open with a great community event, which was one of the great traditions of this festival. You would make sure that the art you presented was challenging art as well as entertaining art. You would make sure that there was plenty for the family. You would make sure that there was plenty of free stuff as well as big ticketed events. You would make sure that there was text in the theatre and that there was music theatre in amongst the music. You would make sure that it was physically centralised and focused, because that is one of the great advantages of this festival. And then in 2000, break the mould in the most appropriate year you could ever do that. Forget the rules just once and emphasise the new. And all the time, let the citizens of Adelaide know, the citizens of Adelaide who really do own this festival, let them in on the experiment all the way along the line. say to people, love the 98 festival as if it is the last, because of course none of us actually know, do we, whether we will be around for the next one personally, whether Adelaide will be around, whether the arts will, who knows? You know, you might be being offered a virtual festival. I have no idea. Love it as if it's your last. It's not a bad clue for life anyway. I mean, everything you do, love the meal as if it's your last. Why not? It may not be. Encourage that. But then in 2000, enjoy experiencing something different. The arts in unexpected places. I'm already calling 2000 the new territory. Familiar forms in unfamiliar places. Unfamiliar new work in the central precinct. I think and I hope that it'll give people an opportunity to value what they have instead of taking it for granted. To test perhaps what scope there might be for change, since everybody's seen the enormous success of Adelaide, the international success of the Adelaide Festival. Everybody else has cloned it. Maybe it's a good idea for Adelaide to go off in a different direction, to lead again. Or where the next century simply says, no, this is ours, this is the way we like it, this is what we want to keep building on. But that's a kind of referendum question for the citizens of Adelaide. Well, so far so good. The response to the program we launched 3 weeks ago has been gratifying. There seems to be the recognition of a classic Adelaide festival for most of the reasons that I just mentioned. There's a very promising advance ticket sale, and there seems to be an exceptional buzz, a great anticipation that we are going to have a good one. Therefore, what remains to be said to you? First of all, perhaps something about themes in festivals. First and foremost, they don't matter. They are firstly there to bring order and planning for a director and for the team. In amongst all that enormous smorgasbord of stuff that you get to choose from, in all the corners of the world, it helps to have something to edit by, to say, is there anything there that would pull things together so that I don't, that doesn't quite fit. Is there any way of pulling it together? Of course, the criteria for bringing anything, whether it be local, free, international, national, the criteria for bringing anything are about skills. We want the best at a skill level. We want the most challenging, so it is innovative and it takes risks. It's dangerous in some senses. And we want that across the board throughout the world. But you can still have layers of connections and meanings in all that. The outcome should be that the sum is worth a great deal more than the parts. Now, many people in Adelaide will go to just one thing in the festival. And indeed, if the million people in Adelaide did go just to one paid event each, it would strike the most phenomenal blow for this economy. One paid event and 100 free events, which is what you could do, because there are at least 100 free events. It would be the greatest experience in the arts that those people would have and in entertainment, and we would be in the black and cheering. And those people who just sample the one event so they can feel that they're part of the festival, they don't need to know anything whatsoever about anything I ever thought about a theme or a connector for this festival. They don't need to know about the layers. It means that each show in the festival, every performance of every show, everything that I have deemed worthy of being in this festival has to be able to stand on its own two feet as a great piece of work in itself, because in some cases that is all the trusting audience will see. But for the literally thousands, tens of thousands of people in this state, hundreds of thousands in this country and millions in the world who do love the arts and do look to the Adelaide Festival as the definitive statement, and that is only possible biennially. You have to have the space to stand back and look to be able to deliver the best in the world. Then for those people, I can say with confidence that the more you see, the more you'll get out of it. I absolutely did not prescribe a theme for this festival, I went out into the world. It's one of the great, great things about this festival, that it has allowed so many people. They walk in, the first thing they say is, we've got to get you started. Go out to the world and look at stuff. It's the first thing you do. See what is in the world at the moment that we might like to invite into our city. I went into the world and I saw artists everywhere, in every genre, at the end of this extraordinary century, searching for meaning, re-examining articles of faith, reassessing practice and form in the arts. And thereby, in my research, the great connection started to arise. And perhaps most satisfying for me just at present is that if any event, any creative work is going to succeed, a song, a show, a speech, a festival, it has to take on its own life. In a sense, what I've done as artistic director is just draft the parameters and create the massive possibilities. I'm just the very, very beginning of what the festival is. The potential of what this festival can achieve is infinitely greater than the simple transaction of what appears in this brochure and ticket sales. The potential genuinely sits now much more in the hands of the team who are and will act creatively and with massive skill and energy to realise this program. It sits with the artists, the hundreds and hundreds of supremely gifted and skilled human beings whom we will welcome to Adelaide in February and March, and who will embrace the danger of live performing every night and create magic for us. And it sits very, very much in the hands of the audience, which embraces all South Australians, the nation, the world, and at the moment, many, many people have this brochure in their hands throughout the world and are responding energetically to it. And of course, that includes all of you. The life that the 1998 Telstra Adelaide Festival is now taking on is very much inclusive of your skills, your depth of response, your capacity to understand this massive potential for pleasure, inspiration, a shared sense of community celebration. Yes, this town knows how to pull it off, knows how to have a good time, knows how to enjoy it. A boost to the economy, it was $20 million in 1996, and a boost to the spirits. The potential for being moved by the power of what human beings can achieve. The thoughts, the philosophy, the faith, the great beauty and skill and daring, the fun, the food, the human body put to extreme physical and emotional test. That's the potential. It's towering, and I don't exaggerate when I say it's magnificent. You and the press as a body do yourselves a massive injustice to your individual human potential every time you get distracted away from just how big and beautiful and awe-inspiring the Adelaide Festival always is in its potential. And with your wholehearted efforts, not mean-spirited ones, but the ones that come to you naturally, it can achieve that startling potential. You see, after Enfield Primary School and Enfield High School and Adelaide University, I could have been anything I wanted to be. It was a time when a kid from the wrong side of the tracks was able to get a scholarship and be anything. I could have been an academic. I was invited to be. I was offered honours in philosophy and politics as well as English. I could have been a brain surgeon like Nicole Kidman in that film where she met her husband. I could have been a lawyer and rich. I probably couldn't have been an Olympic athlete because I sort of only ever really had about 40% of my lung power, although I was particularly good at diving because all you had to do was go to the end of the board and fall off. I won prizes for diving. But what I chose to be was an artist. And I'm very proud of that. In fact, I think, given the little cacklings that are coming from Canberra at the moment, that I might actually personally fund a heap of badges that say, in big, lovely colours, proud to be an artist or an arts worker or an arts lover, because that position is being denigrated at the moment. I'm proud of it, very proud of it. I believe that artists sit at the very apex of human achievement. We understand that because of telly shows that doctors feel like that when they save a life, when they change a face, where they put in a heart. They think they're at that moment of life, but I, as an artist, feel like that as well. The creative act, the little birth every time. And as R.D. Lang said in the famous 60s, who are we to despair every time something new is born? There does exist for the potential for every solution, every bit of wonder to this world. And that's where I believe artists sit all the time, at that beautiful moment of risk, danger, anticipation, magic, wonder, imagination, the very stuff of what the very best of humanity can be. That's the way I feel about my chosen profession. And the Adelaide Festival, against the background of which I was raised as an artist, is one of the most important crucibles in the world for that appreciation. Only the most jaded and the most cynical of humans will be able to deny the potential for human wonder and celebration that this city possesses in February and March every 2 years. The realisation of all this is now with those artists, many of whom live in Adelaide, my team, the audience, and you. For my hometown's sake, and the bright future of my little nieces and nephews, the bright-eyed little creatures who will emerge as the citizens who we hand the world on to next century. In that spirit, I really want you to make it work. Right now, a sense of real celebration and of wonder, an uplifting of the spirits and a rejoicing in what the creative imagination can bring about is very much needed. Let us let it happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Robin. Damn, there's going to be no virtual festival. We'll have to turn up. Not 1 year, but twice. I now invite questions from the media, and I would ask you first to give your organisation first and ask a question. If the media runs out of questions, then accept questions from the general public. Thank you very much indeed.
Who have we got? Mignon Ellicott.
Thank you. Mignon Ellicott, formerly ABC. Is this working? Yeah. First of all, Robin Archer, I would like to congratulate you on all the research you have carried out for next year's festival, which is undoubtedly exemplary. But I have a few queries. First of all, every year I have attended every festival since its inception, and I have been anxiously waiting to book make my preferential bookings. But this year, I am sorry to say, but I haven't made any preferential booking. But I think my main concern is that I wish to criticise this, that you said that you covered all genre. Well, I wish to dispute this. In previous festivals, we have had the London Symphony Orchestra and leading vocalists and instrumentalists, and I find this area completely devoid of any interest, as far as I'm concerned. I would like to ask you to explain this.
Mm-hmm. You will find in the booking brochure. Thanks for your question. By the way, this comment isn't meant to you, because I thought your question was a very good one. But before I take any other questions, I think I'll tell you that I might take the lead from my old friend Fatty Francis, that I think I've worked with Fatty a lot, and this is a good question, but I think if we find a question beneath the dignity of all of us, I might just tell you to piss off and get a life. Fatty's very good at that, I think. I think he's very funny. This is a good question. You will see in the program, with regards to an orchestra, one of the great orchestras of the world is appearing at the Adelaide Festival for the first time in 8 years. That's the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, conducted by... Well, I would say that that's... The program is a matter of debate. It was decided by the Sydney Festival, the Sydney Symphony Orchestra. Sir John Drummond had a great hand in devising this program. Ado Devart, an eminent international conductor, is conducting in Adelaide for the first time. And you must be aware that many festivals will have an international orchestra at all costs. Most of the ones that were willing to come under about $1 million to Australia in 1998 are not as good as the Sydney Symphony Orchestra. This was a deliberate choice. I tried 6 vocalists who I might have preferred. I tried them 2.5 years ago. None of them were willing to come to Adelaide, nor were they willing to come to Australia. These included Anne Sophie Von Otter, who I would love to have had, and Dawn Upshaw, who I would love to have had, and they couldn't come. I wrote personally to Alfred Brendel to ask if he would come and play Schoenberg for us. He wrote me a delightful letter back, but said that he couldn't because he's ill. We do happen to have one of the great choirs of the world in the Berliner Radio Choir. We do have one of the greatest leader singers in the world in terms of a vocalist, Hans-Peter Blockfitz, doing a program of Brahms and Britten, to name one. And there will be a very fine, there is already a very fine pianist soloist, an instrumentalist, playing the Schoenberg Piano Concerto, Mari Kadama. And the violinist that we had, who was going to play Sofia Gubadolina's Offertorium and going to play the Alban Berg Concerto, pulled out at the very last minute, and they are negotiating to get another at this moment. I think that all the things that you want to see are absolutely in the festival. It would only really be a matter of your taste versus my taste about what they actually played, I think.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Hard for me to know exactly what the effect is because I've been away. I've only literally got to Adelaide yesterday, having been in China and Japan, which is when the changeover happened. So I wasn't in Australia. So I don't know what it's going to do. My parents made a comment last night, and my parents are just about the gauge of everything in Adelaide. I mean, it's like I'm connected into a world I don't know about. They were finding it a bit inconvenient. They found it inconvenient because of the leasing system, but that's not my comment. That's kind of ordinary suburban people. Of course, you will appreciate that given the chance to have the festival artistic director's head all over Adelaide at the time when people should be buying tickets was an extremely attractive one. And it's the first time that this face that deserves to be on the back of a bus is. So it's one of the reasons why I was very happy to do it. Also, I have to say that, you know, in the end, what the people at the Advertiser were telling me is that it's what the majority of the people wanted. And like governments, a country gets the government it deserves. I guess you would say the same of newspapers.
I find it very hard to comment here. Any other questions, please? From the media first, do we have the media? Thank you.
Robin, David Sly of the Advertiser.
David.
You sort of intimated towards your predecessor, Barry Kosky.
Settle down up the back there. Come on, David.
You sort of intimated towards your predecessor, Barry Kosky, with his profile as a personality over Adelaide during the last festival. It worked very well, and I think in this day and age it's showing the gulf between actual form and marketing. Marketing is such an important part of festival. How important do you see your role now? You almost said, or you suggested in your speech that the hard work was forming the program. Looking at Kosky's form, part of his hard work was also the marketing. How hard do you see yourself as a marketing figure for this coming festival?
As you know, Barry was pretty much unknown outside of Melbourne before I asked him to direct Cafe Fledermaus to open the Playbox Theatre in Melbourne. As you know, he invited me to his festival, I invited him to mine, and we will continue to work together. We're very good friends. I admire him very much. In that light, I would say, in what way did the hard marketing of Barry help the festival? Because the festival was a great success at the time, but it lost money. I mean, rather a large amount of money. And I couldn't directly relate those two incidents, but personality-driven anything doesn't necessarily guarantee success in all levels. I think in terms of people thinking they were having a great time, it was great, and thank God for Barry that he did that and it worked in that way. I have to say that I've been saying to people, I'm not so sure it's a good idea with me. I would rather the program stood up for itself and people got excited about the program instead of me, because I think if they get excited about the program, they're more likely to buy tickets to the program and we won't lose money. People have to appreciate what I've done in terms of the program, the care that's been taken and the strategy that's there, but they don't necessarily have to fall in love with me, and their festival buzz won't necessarily be sitting next to me somewhere during the festival or seeing me go through the street. So, I mean, it worked in one sense, it worked brilliantly, but that didn't actually pan out in ticket sales, and I don't want that to happen to my festival. So, of course I've got a lot of work to do. This is the second speech today. There'll be one that'll end at 10 o'clock tonight, three meetings this afternoon, two speeches tomorrow. I mean, it's working all Saturday and Sunday, and then I've got to go off and address a huge conference in Sydney on Monday. There are literally no nights off, no weekends off. I work about a 16 or 18 hour day. I, though, have some urgent things to do with 2000. It's very important for my team to be getting on delivering the 98 Festival, because you have to understand that by this time, the director for the next festival would already be appointed and on salary and doing the job and working at doing 2000. I have to do both, and I have to do that at the moment. So far, and I think you've read this in your own paper, the position, when I counted a week ago, though it's changing dramatically, a week ago ticket sales were better than they'd been since 1988, and at this stage in 96 the ticket sales were at 2%. A week ago we were already over 20%. So if I've taken a slightly, well, I tried to take a slightly less public stance, it doesn't seem to have affected ticket sales. In fact, we'd say that there's something good happening there.
Thank you.
Rex Jory, the advertiser.
Yep.
Thank you for your words today. Simple question. Do we as a community take the festival seriously enough? Or perhaps put it another way, does the government finance it well enough?
It's a good question, Rex. Thank you. I think the community does take the festival seriously. I think the festival is taken more seriously here than in any other place. And I think part of the controversy that happens with every festival is to do with that allegiance. The sorts of things that get criticised in festival context wouldn't be remarked upon, and indeed they are happening in the same town at the same time and nobody bothers about them. If they're attached to the festival, the reason everybody, you know, says, look, let's do this and let's do that, is because they believe it's their festival, and that's a great thing to happen. So I certainly think that the people take it seriously. I guess the best way to, I mean, the government has given us more money for 2000. It is as nothing, a drop in the ocean, in terms of what will be available in 2000 in Sydney and 2001 in Victoria. So the Adelaide Festival as an institution has to face some very hard questions over the next couple of years. And they are being faced. I have encouraged the board to start thinking hard and fast about what it wants to do. I am part of those discussions, although it doesn't concern me. I won't be there and I won't be on salary, but I am, after all, a person from Adelaide. All my family's here and I care about the future of the state very much, particularly the state of the arts in this state. I think it's dangerous when any institution whatsoever, including cultural ones, have an inordinate oversupply of government subsidy. I think a healthy balance is a very good thing. And the current balance is, I mean, we're sitting at the moment at around, we're now over 3.1 million in corporate sponsorship. There's 3.5 from the government and an extra million from other sources like the City Council, and there's up around 3 for box office. It's a very healthy balance at the moment. What you would love to happen is that they all raise. You'd like it all to go up. I mean, it's increased the sponsorship dollar has increased massively for this festival. We hope that the ticket sales will as well. It depends in the end how much various members of the government value the festival. My discussions with the Minister and with the Premier over the past 2 years have been very encouraging. They seem to me to display a great enthusiasm for the festival. I think there's always danger when the bean counters come out because they're likely not to evaluate the unquantifiable measures of it. An economic impact statement that says that the festival brings $20 million to local business is pretty hard to deny anyway, but there are an immense number of other things. That's always the problem with the arts. It's hard to quantify what it actually does for a city, and therefore when Treasury gets a hold of it, sometimes they just add it all up and say, too much, take it off. It hasn't happened yet here, and I think that the government has to look very carefully about what it's going to do. 2,000 won't be a problem. It's after that that I think everybody is going to have a look at the kinds of monies that go into the arts. I mean, recently the Melbourne City Council put $21 million into the arts in Victoria to support Asian Australian culture. Big bucks, very big bucks, and very good thinking. Adelaide can't ever summon those kinds of monies. It's got to do what it's always done and be clever. But I think one has to make sure that the government keeps on supporting the arts in this state. And perhaps the more crucial question is not the festival, because they've been good to us. They've honoured the promise, even though I have to pay. I am not only the first woman and the first to do two festivals, but the first director who's had to pay back the previous festival's debt. That's the first time that's ever happened. That's all right. We're coping with that. I'm a big girl. I've got broad shoulders. I'm doing that, and we'll get that done. That's being responsible, and I don't mind looking at that. Probably one of the most crucial things about the arts in South Australia at the moment is the infrastructure between festival times. Because, for instance, one of the reasons why it's been very difficult to do an opera in an Adelaide festival is because there haven't been enough opera company funds to do it. In the past, when Adelaide opened with a traditional opera in a new version, the great ones that they did, the Fiery Angel, the Macropolis Affair, those great productions were part of the state opera's annual season. They devoted their public subsidy to that. Now, in 98 and 99, there is no money because of the ring cycle. There is none. It is a miracle that I've been able to get Flammar in the park to do, as it were, a requiem for the public as well as the people. And the opera company have come up with as much money as we can, and we're paying a fortune for it. But in Victoria, or in Sydney, or in Perth, or in Queensland, it's really easy and cheap for them to do an opera because the local company does it. So it's things like the ongoing infrastructure that says when we do a festival, we've got a lot of well-funded, properly funded local companies of a very high quality that we can rely on to be part of the festival as well. And my belief is that if we all, with interest in the arts, work to make sure that local Adelaide companies of high quality, and we are inordinately well supplied with local companies of great quality, Merrill, Tankard, Lee Warren, Doppio Teatro, Max Matravassa's Theatre O'Neiron is coming on, Red Shed, Magpie, State Theatre we have hopes for, the Symphony Orchestra, ADCO, the Australian String Quartet, I mean, and various individuals, local singers like Andrea Rennett, some jazz. We are well endowed with talent. We have to make sure that those keep on being well serviced so that when festival time comes around, it only requires a bit of additional money from the festival and again from the state so that those companies and artists can do something special for the festival as it used to be in the past.
Time for two more, I think.
Robin, Sorry. Robin Archer, I'm Drusilla Patkin on holiday from ABC in Hobart.
Hi.
Hi. First of all, is it true that you're going to be calling the Year 2000 Festival the Second Coming? And that's just a rumour I've heard. And the question I wanted to ask you is about that ongoing community support for the arts. How do you compete with the home video machine and places like the new Marion Megaplex Theatre as being the definition of what some people call as art?
Yeah, that's an ongoing... No, it's not going to be called the Second Coming. It's just going to be called the New Territory. I've drawn the map already and it's fabulous. Yeah, that's why in many ways I said to people about the 1998 festival, get it while you can. Love it as if it's your last, because it won't naturally happen that that kind of festival is possible in the future. It won't happen naturally, it will happen with effort. We all know, I mean, given the very first question, the best opportunity to experience the great orchestras of the world is to get yourself a very, very good digital reproducing system, because they're not all going to come to your city and there isn't the money to bring them to your city. And, you know, if I bought, I mean, there are probably two or three orchestras that I might consider bringing here. It would cost the entire Festival Performing Arts budget to bring them here. That's all there is to it. I mean, you are about to witness that in the Olympics Arts Festival. Australian art won't get much of a Guernsey because a huge amount of money will be paid to bring a huge orchestra to Sydney. That poses a quite amazing question. The way most people experience the great performances is by digital reproduction at the moment. It's a fierce competitor and it will get more competitive. However, let's look at what happened when everybody said home video will wipe out the movie market. You know, huge cinema complexes being built all over Australia. Go down Cinema Strip every night in Sydney or Melbourne, swarming with people. You have to book in advance to go to movies. Australian movies are eagerly awaited for and anticipated and enjoyed. And that, I believe, is because of the social aspect of going out together. So, yes, there are challenges from digital reproduction. But when people are sick of that, they will still want to go out and be human beings. They will still want to share experiences together. And in the end, live performance is an incredible medium. It's very dangerous. There is always a sense of danger. Will they forget the words? Will they make the note? Will they fall off the trapeze? Will they get it right? That idea that you are in the same room as a person who has to bring all their intellectual and physical energy together to serve you in that couple of hours is still one of the great experiences you can have. And, you know, festivals keep on getting people going to them. You know, it won't happen naturally. We have to work at it. But if one keeps spreading the message, I see no reason why festivals can't be around. But it's like everything. Don't take it for granted. Because if you take it for granted, somebody will take it away again. It's got to keep working. If you love something, say you love it. Say you appreciate it. Say you care about it. That's the best way I can think of making sure that it stays there.
Well, that seems a great note to go out on. Thank you, Robin Archer. You didn't fall off your trapeze, and I have here a gift.
I can tell you what it is.
It's an iPhone, right?
It is, in fact, the core of the advertiser. It's Arlene Hardy Chardonnay and a Darrenberg Petit Verdot. And I'll fight you for them. Robin Archer, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.